Want to continue a study we began last Sunday morning about empowered by faith. Empowered by faith. I want to repeat that passage that Justin just read, verse 6. Without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he that comes to God must believe that he is and that he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. Well, what is faith? What does faith look like? That's what we're studying as we look at Hebrews chapter 11, faith's great hall of fame. And just as last week, I want to continue a series of statements that summarize some of the passages that we'll find in Hebrews 11 that speak about these great heroes and heroines of faith. But remember this, that the whole Christian life is a life of faith. It can be summed up by faith. For we walk by faith, 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7, not by sight. It's a walk, it's a daily thing, but it's a walk that's to be by faith. I want to remind you of a song by Steve Green that has these words in the second verse. Surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us run the race not only for the prize, but as those who've gone before us, let us leave to those behind us the heritage of faithfulness passed on through godly lives. And that passage, so great a cloud of witnesses, comes from Hebrews chapter 12. And this is almost a direct quote from that passage. Since we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us. Well, that cloud of witnesses is Hebrews chapter 11. And so as we continue to look at that chapter, let's see the definition of faith by describing how it worked, how these men and women with great faith, how they responded to God's instructions, or how their faith moved them to act because of their faith in God. Here are some descriptions of faith for us to ponder. The first one is this. Faith believes what it sees in the distance. Faith believes what it sees in the distance. One writer likened it to being on a cruise ship and seeing these islands way off in the distance and just being able to wave to them and not being able to see them up close and personal. Look with me to verse 13 of Hebrews 11. These all died in faith, these Old Testament believers, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. There's one thing certain in the mind of the author of Hebrews as he's guided by the Holy Spirit, that these men and women of faith were just passing through, as we sing in this beloved song. This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. My reward is laid up in a place that is yet to come. And with these promises that God had made to these people, they didn't receive them, but they saw them from afar off. They lived and died, never received all that God had promised. But they teach us that faith sees beyond the material present. And faith takes long views. They hadn't physically seen the actual fulfillment of God's promises, but they had seen through the eye of faith how God had promised to bless them, and he believed that he would remain true to his word. They were firmly convinced that God's promise would be fulfilled, and they gladly welcomed it from a distance. Look with me to verse 14. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. It's clear they were headed for another land. That's why Abraham and Isaac and Jacob dwelt in tents. They knew this wasn't the eternal city for which they were looking. They were just pilgrims. They were just sojourners. And so they were looking forward to the promise that God had made of this eternal city. And with that kind of mindset and that kind of faith, God is not ashamed to call him his children. For he has prepared a city for them. But that faith, even though they didn't see the realization of those promises, it motivated them to keep on following God and to keep trusting him and look forward with anticipation to the ultimate realization of these promises. Faith sees beyond the present. It sees in the distance. Number two, faith holds nothing back. Faith holds nothing back. Verse 17. That's Abraham. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, "In Isaac your seed shall be called." Whenever we partake of the Lord's Supper, we're asked by Jesus to remember. And there are different things that many of us do that we think about to help us reflect upon the price that was paid for our souls. And having this text in mind, I thought about my son. And I thought about having to give him for the most wicked of people for his life to be taken so that they could be saved. I can't comprehend it. I can't think about it very long. But that's what God did for us, and that's what Abraham did. The son of promise, the long-awaited son, from the age of 75 until finally 25 years later, Isaac is born to aged parents. They'd waited 25 years. And it was this son through whom the promises were centered, all the hopes and promises that God had made. And yet God tells Abraham, "Take your son, your only son, whom you love, and go and offer him as a sacrifice on Mount Moriah." And Abraham went. He obeyed. And he had to listen to that question, "Where is the sacrifice?" And he answered Isaac and said, "God will provide." And he bound Isaac and put him on the altar. And I believe in his heart, he had already offered Isaac. And he was about to slay him with that knife when the Lord stopped him. He was in the act of offering Isaac when God intervened. How could he do that? By faith, Abraham was willing to do that, but by faith, he also concluded, verse 19, that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. In other words, not only did he have the faith to obey God, even when he didn't understand, he had the faith to understand and trust God that what he had promised, he was going to remain true to his word. And so if God told him to offer Isaac, it must be, Abraham is thinking, that God's going to raise Isaac from the dead, because God promised that through your son Isaac, all these promises will be fulfilled. And he had no precedent from which to draw. He had seen nothing raised from the dead. But he trusted God, who was going to keep his word, even if God told him to offer his son. I think Abraham is thinking that even before he gets to Mount Moriah. He says to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey. The lad and I will go yonder and worship, and we will come back to you." He's thinking, "I've got to offer my son." Can't imagine. But he also says, "We." Somehow. Because God is always true to his word. "We will come back to you." He reasoned that God would raise the dead rather than allow one iota of his word to fail. Number three, faith sees beyond the moment of death. We see this in Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. Verse 20, by faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshiped, leaning on the top of his staff. By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instruction concerning his bones. Each of these men, as they approached death, looked in faith to things yet unseen. They thought beyond their demise to God's promises that were yet to be fulfilled. And because of their faith in God and in his word, they blessed their sons. They gave them blessing, looking ahead, believing that God would fulfill his promises in and through them. As they approached death, they looked in faith to things as yet unseen. And so Isaac blessed his sons, Jacob his sons and grandsons, and Joseph looked into the distant future. And he said this, I'm dying, he says to his brothers, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land to the land which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you and you shall carry up my bones from here. He's looking into the future. How does he know what's going to happen in the future? Because God had said, Abraham, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob would inherit this land, the promised land of Canaan. And so Joseph, who is still in Egypt, is looking forward years ahead. And he says, I know this is going to happen because God said it would. And when the people of Israel are delivered out of Egyptian bondage, and when they are taken, led by the Lord, to the promised land, take my bones with you. Perhaps take my mummy with you as the Egyptians embalm the dead. How could he do that? Because faith sees beyond the moment of death. Joseph knew that death could not cancel the promises of God. So when you and I face death, we know the promises of God are still true. And if he's promised us that when we submit our faith and we trust Jesus, we clothe ourselves in him in baptism, and we walk in the light as he is in the light, and he has promised that if we'll do that, then he'll give us a reward and eternal life in heaven, that when we face death, we know God's promise is still true. And faith sees beyond the moment of death. But we also see in Hebrews 11 that faith risks everything gladly. Consider Moses' parents. By faith, Moses, and it's really speaking of Moses' parents, by faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's command. And the historical context is that the Israelites in Egypt were growing so numerous that a Pharaoh that arose that didn't know about Joseph was concerned. You know, these Israelites are growing so numerous that they could revolt against us. They could join our enemies and easily overtake us. So we need to oppress them. We need to keep them in check. And so they made them into slaves. But yet the people of Israel kept multiplying. And so Pharaoh gave this instruction, Exodus 1 verse 22, every son who is born you shall cast in the river, and every daughter you shall save alive. And that began to be done. Then Moses' mother found that she was expecting. 9 months later, after concealing her abdomen for those 9 months, Moses is born. And they see he's a beautiful child. But they know Pharaoh's decree. Every son you shall throw into the river. You shall kill every son. When the woman conceived, we read in Exodus 2, and bore a son, she saw that he was a beautiful child. She hid him 3 months. And when she could no longer hide him, she took an ark of bulrushes for him, daubed it with asphalt and pitch, put the child in it, and laid it in the reeds by the river's bank. They concealed that child for 3 months. And now they're just asking God, protect this child. We don't want him to be killed. We see he's beautiful. We see promise in this son. And so we're willing to risk our lives so that he might live. Faith risks everything gladly. They weren't afraid of the king's command. Kill me if you want to. Let my son live. Faith risks everything for your children so that they can have faith, so that they can know God, so that they can be saved. And we see providentially how Pharaoh's own daughter found Moses and took him into her own home. But he lived because his parents feared God so much that they didn't fear the king at all. They knew he was a gift from God, deserving of their love and protection. And so they risked everything to keep him alive. Faith, next, refuses the world. Moses grows up. And that's key. Notice this. By faith, verse 24, Moses, when he became of age, NIV has it, when he had grown up. I want to underscore that. When he had grown up, when he had become an adult, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. But he made this adult decision. And I emphasize that because Josephus hands down a tale of this refusal of Moses as though it came early in his life. Josephus hands down this tale that reports that Moses, while still a young boy, was offered the crown by Pharaoh. And Moses responded by taking this crown, throwing it into the ground, and stomping on it. But that's not what the scriptures teach us. This was an adult decision. This wasn't a choice due to childish ignorance or the rashness of youth. But as an adult who had grown up in Pharaoh's household, who knew the language and the custom of Egypt, who was likely in line for the throne of Egypt, made a choice. He could have said, I'll stay here and enjoy the best that this world has to offer. Or he says, I could identify with my people, God's people, and suffer along with them. And he made the choice to suffer, because he knew the rewards of following after God were greater than all the riches of Egypt. Faith refuses the world. You can make some choices and enjoy the things of this world, the passing pleasures of sin. We have to realize those joys are only passing. Or we can make the responsible choice, the difficult choice that Moses did by our faith and say, no, I'm going to give that up so that I can follow Jesus all the way to heaven, which will be far greater than anything this world has to offer. Faith separates God's people from the world. Verse 29. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, whereas the Egyptians attempting to do so were drowned. Here's one of the great miracles of the scriptures, that these Israelites who have been delivered out of Egyptian bondage, and Pharaoh changes his mind, as he was known to do quite often. And so the Egyptian army is chasing after them, and the Israelites come to the Red Sea, and they say they don't know how they're going to escape the Egyptian army. Moses says, "Stand back and see the salvation of the Lord." And the waters were parted, and they passed through on dry ground. And the Egyptians, witnessing this miracle as well, say, "Well, if they can do it, maybe we can too." And so they charge in after them, and then the waters crash down upon them and destroy them. You see, faith made a great separation in this case. Just as faith separates God's people from the world, in the great judgment to come, true faith in Jesus will be the dividing line between the saved and the lost. Faith separates God's people from the world. Next, faith brings down the walls of impossibility. That's a reference to Joshua and the people of Israel, who marched around the walls of Jericho. Verse 30, "By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled for 7 days." Imagine being an Israelite. Imagine hearing these instructions from Joshua. "We're going to march around this city." And perhaps we're thinking, "Yes, and then we'll storm through the gates and overtake this city in the name of God." He said, "No, we're just going to march around the city one time for 6 days. 7th day, we're going to do something different." And perhaps we're thinking, "Okay, here's the strategy of how we're going to overtake this city. We're going to march around this city 7 times. And we're going to blow the ram's horns. We're going to shout out loud. And Joshua says, "That's the instructions from God." And when they followed those divine instructions, a characteristic of mark of faith, the walls of the city, by the power of God, came crashing down. Faith brings down the walls of impossibility. We may encounter situations in our lives when we can't see how we can follow God because of the circumstances in which we're in. Folks, faith brings down the walls of impossibility. God will empower you to do whatever He has called you to do. I love this one. Faith redeems from an unsavory past. Rahab, verse 31. "By faith, the harlot," or the prostitute Rahab, "did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received the spies with peace." Folks, I don't know about you, but I've read through the years many different explanations of trying to explain away that Rahab's occupation. They said it means an innkeeper, and I reserve the right to learn more, but it's going to have to be proven to me, because everything that I've read suggests to me that this is accurate. She was a harlot. She was a prostitute. She sold herself to make money. But by faith, she saved the spies. She recognized this God of Israel is the one true living God. By faith, she obeyed the instructions. "If you'll hang out that scarlet cord, you and your family will be spared." She trusted. She acted upon her faith. And though she had lived as a prostitute, she was saved. This story teaches us that no one is beyond the reach of God's grace. Faith redeems from an unsavory past. I also love this one. Faith empowers flawed heroes. That would be Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah. Verse 32, "What more shall I say? For the time would fail to tell me of Gideon, of Barak, of Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the other prophets." And I want to just mention briefly these four. Gideon defeated the Midianites despite his fear. We find him treading grain in a wine press because he's scared to death. Barak defeated the Canaanites despite being forced into battle by a woman.
And I'm not trying to discredit Deborah by any means, but I'm saying Barak followed her lead. Samson defeated the Philistines. We remember his strength, but we also remember his tremendous weakness, his moral compromise with Delilah. But God used him. Jephthah defeated the Ammonites despite making a terrible, rash vow concerning his daughter. And the point is, none of these men were completely admirable. They were all messed up in one way or another. And folks, that puts them in the same camp with us. But God used them because of their faith. God can use us despite our weaknesses, despite our failures. Faith empowers flawed heroes. I got to jump to the end of Hebrews 11 to remind us of this, that faith joins us with a glorious past. We're surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses. We've looked at descriptions of faith, what faith is, by their very lives and by what their faith prompted them to do. And the Hebrew writer says these were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. Why not? Listen, God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us, they would be made perfect. He delayed the fulfillment of his promises to these people, so that we could join in and see the fulfillment of what they put their faith in. Another version states it like this: all these people are known for their faith, but none of them receive what God had promised. God planned to give us something better so that they would be made perfect, but only together with us. So that tells us that whenever we respond in faith, whenever we trust God, when we take Him at His word, when we do His will despite the odds, then one day these promises that they were waiting for are going to be realized not only by them, but by us. And God is waiting for the big surprise, if you will, for everyone who's responded in faith. As we look at these heroes of faith, here's a question for us to think about. Who'll be the next hero of the faith? I've got some heroes right here. Who will respond to God's call? Who will stand up against the world? Why not you? Who will step out in faith? Who will march around the walls? Why not you? Why not me? Who will dream big dreams for God? Who will lead the way for your family to follow? Who will risk opposition from the world? Who will give up the pleasures of the world for the sake of the cross? Why not you? Who will be the next hero of the faith? Steve Green wrote, "Oh, may all who come behind us find us faithful. May the fire of our devotion light their way. May the footprints that we leave lead them to believe. And the lives we live inspire them to obey. Oh, may all who come behind us find us faithful." Are you faithful? Do you need to respond in faith to the Lord's invitation to become a child of His, to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ so that your sins can be washed away in the waters of baptism by the precious blood of Jesus? Do you need to recommit to following in the steps of faith, asking God and asking for His people to pray with you and for you, for strength to follow in the way that He leads? Without faith, it's impossible to please God. Because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. If you need to respond this morning, please come right now as we stand and sing.